Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Well, thank you very much, Aaron. It's always good when you stand up and give a presentation and you think, you know, am I going to stand up and say exactly the same thing that the previous person has said? And the answer in this case is definitely no. Thank God, that's a good starting point. But actually, your last two points actually are absolutely perfect in terms of an introduction to what I'm actually now going to talk about. So you'd have thought we'd have actually thought about it in advance, but we haven't. I suppose the first thing for me to say is that actually in terms of the question, well, the title of my presentation, there is no question mark. So this is an absolute statement, and I think that's probably something which is quite important in terms of understanding the role in which international students play in UK higher education, and indeed the importance of internationalisation within UK higher education in terms of an overall agenda. I think, universities one way or another have had an incredibly high profile in the last couple of years, and whilst the issue of domestic policy in terms of university tuition fees, etc., seems to be dying down at the moment, issues around the role of universities and their place in terms of the international community, I think, is something which has been edging its way into the kind of the borders of the newspapers. But I think it's absolutely right that universities should be pushing as much as possible to demonstrate the absolutely incredibly important role that they play, both in terms of pushing forward the UK economy, but actually in terms of taking a leadership in terms of the international economy. And indeed, not just the international economy, but actually the growth of international society. So, you know, nobody could fail to remember the huge and devastating effects of the earthquake in Japan over the last year, to look at the volatility of the Middle East, and actually think that in both of those cases, there are already UK universities that are engaged, have been engaged almost from the very minute that those disasters and those opportunities changes arose, to actually step in and see what they could do to actually support and bring about change and put those countries, to assist those countries in terms of moving towards their future. The best universities from whichever country that they're located are international in their outlook. Those universities are best and better placed, best placed to serve all of their students, support the economy, to support the economic development of their own country, and to support the economic development of the wider community. So in my contribution today, I'd like to unpack some of the principles that underpin the success of the UK in attracting international students and the broader benefits that internationalisation brings. I'm going to explore some of the international work networks specifically that business and management schools are engaged in, and I'm going to draw on the findings of a research project published last November by the 1994 group of universities, which looked closely at the types of international activity their members are engaged in. I'm going to talk about what it is that drives universities' international ambitions, and I'd then like to talk a little bit about some of the barriers and the steps that can be taken to remove them. The benefits of international partnerships in particular are well recognised by UK universities, as the presence of UK institutions in Malaysia, for example, illustrates. During my visits to the country, both in 2009 and 2011, I've witnessed firsthand a wealth of evidence of the esteem that UK higher education is held in by both the government, but also the people of the country and the broader region. Yet I was astonished to read the report from the Quality Assurance Agency published in the autumn of 2010, which reported the sheer scale of the UK higher education operation in the country. Of the 171 UK institutions responding to the QAA survey, 72 had provision within the country. They reported 260 separate collaborative links with 107 different Malaysian partner institutions. In addition, two of the 72 institutions confirmed that they had or were developing campuses in Malaysia. 25 UK institutions, or 15% of respondents, had links with only one partner in Malaysia, but others had multiple partners, with one university having partnerships with 19 separate Malaysian organisations. Most of the links were within a single subject area, even where there was more than one programme involved. All but five of the 19 primary joint academic coding system subject groups were represented. The most common subject was business and management, which accounted for 75 or 29% of the links, followed by engineering, 46 links, and law with 24 links. This is a level of partnership which I consider phenomenal, especially when we consider that other countries are enjoying similar levels of engagement by UK HEIs. So what is it that drives UK universities to enter into these international partnerships? Research undertaken by the 1994 group suggests a number of drivers. The survey undertaken in 2011 found that the vast majority agreed that fulfillment of mission was the main benefit of working internationally. The benefits to institutional reputation and the ability to recruit students and researchers also figured highly. And interestingly, a significant number of institutions cited the benefits partnership brings to the country of the partner. So it seems that partnership is driven by a mix of philosophical, practical, and altruistic motivations. In a philosophical sense, UK universities rightly recognise that the academy is international in nature and that the fundamental purpose of higher education is to advance and disseminate knowledge without regard to the origin of ideas. This means creating conditions for study that crosses international boundaries, helping students to enjoy a diverse, multicultural experience which prepares them well for the international jobs market. It also means allowing researchers to work together and share facilities without recourse to the limits of geography. In practical terms, it means that institutions recognise the value that a global status brings. Recruiting international students is a key objective for UK institutions, and one that is aided by having a reputation that is known right around the world. At home also, the attraction of being part of a globally recognised academic institution carries weight with potential students. Beyond student recruitment, it is in the very university's interest to be able to promote its research as being internationally recognised and significant, particularly into the run-up to the new REF assessments with their inclusion of measures around impact. Finally, the altruistic drivers. As the 1994 group survey revealed, the potential positive impact partnership brings the partner institution and its country is one of the foremost reasons why UK universities pursue an international agenda. Internationalisation of higher education ensures the spread of knowledge and experience vital for development. The contributions of UK universities to collaborative research projects, knowledge transfer, and assistance to the economic progress of developing countries are indispensable. For the UK's business schools specifically, these features are practically realised and recognised through their pursuit of international accreditation. 12% of all domestic and EU students enrolled in the UK, undergraduate and postgraduate, are pursuing business studies. Amongst non-EU students, it's 33%. With companies recruiting worldwide, with students choosing to get their education outside their home countries, and with schools building alliances across borders and continents, there is a rapidly growing need for them to be able to identify those institutions in other countries that deliver high-quality education in international management. Given the importance globally of attracting international students and faculty to our schools, top-quality business and management schools seek recognition internationally through accreditation by the European Foundation for Management Development, EFMD, through their EQUIS accreditation, the Association of MBAs, AMBA, and the Association to Advance Collegiate Schools of Business, AACSB. All three accrediting bodies consider internationalisation to some extent as part of their accreditation process. For EFMD and EQUIS in particular, accredited institutions must demonstrate not only general high quality in all dimensions of their activities, but also a high degree of internationalisation. As of April 2012, 649 schools globally hold AACSB accreditation across 43 countries and territories. EFMD have awarded EQUIS standard to 133 schools across 34 countries, and AMBA currently accredits MBA programs at 190 schools across 75 different countries. For students who are coming to study business studies at undergraduate level or postgraduate level, they are not choosing between Oxford or Cambridge or South Bank or CAS. They are choosing between Harvard and Yale and a school in China and a school in India on the basis of the international standard that those institutions hold. for the UK to continue to punch above its weight in its proportion of schools accredited compared to its international competitors, it is essential that we are open and welcoming to international students and faculty, and that we are constantly stretching the boundaries to ensure that we are delivering the highest quality international experience. One specific example of this international approach in practice is the joint EFMD Association of Business Schools International Dean's Development Programme, which has been running over the last 5 years. The IDP is aimed at recently appointed deans of business schools that are global members of either association. The IDP enables a group of up to 20 international deans to visit business schools in 3 countries, gaining a unique overview of strategy, operations, structures, and future markets in business and management education. The current IDP includes deans from a diverse range of European schools and also representatives from countries including the US, Nigeria, and China. Through Britain's participation in the international higher education market, it generates a great deal of export revenue and economic benefits. But its real value for the future of this country lies in these links and partnerships that it creates. In the 2009 UK-US study group report, Higher Education and Globalization in a Global Collaboration in a Global Context, Building a Global Civil Society, the argument is put forward that the best way for UK and US universities to maintain their global primacy in an increasingly competitive market is to develop strategic partnerships. The report argued that the interests of both countries would be served by the extension of the HE model around the world. This will, it suggested, foster the growth of an open, competitive, and accessible higher education sector in other nations and will constitute a vitally important form of soft diplomacy and power. So, the philosophical aim of pursuing the core mission of the Academy, the practical aim of enhancing an institution's global reputation, and the altruistic aim of contributing to the progress of international development. These are the 3 motivations which are the driving force behind the increased internationalisation of UK universities. In pursuit of these aims, in January 2011, as part of the implementation of the Association of Business Schools' new strategic plan, the Association of Business Schools signed strategic agreements with the Association of Asian Pacific Business Schools, the British Council, the Canadian Federation of Business Schools, the Association of Business Schools in the Middle East, and we're in the process of finalising an arrangement with the Australian Business School Deans Association. In addition, we restated our commitment to EQUAL, the Global Association of Business Schools Association, of which I am a board member. These agreements will focus upon capacity building, joint events, research, publications, memberships on committees, and added value for all membership bases. The outputs from these agreements are already starting to bear fruit for the association and for its members. In March 2012, I represented the ABS as part of an official governmental delegation to Indonesia, a hugely underdeveloped international HE market, and in association with the Association of Asian Pacific Business Schools and the University of Nottingham, we are currently planning the first UK Asia Pacific Business Schools Summit to take place in Malaysia at the end of November this year. So what form are these institutional partnerships taking? Research undertaken by the 94 Group in 2011 looked closely at the types of international teaching partnerships established across its membership. The results are a good indicator of the breadth of these partnerships across the sector. At a headline level, the report identified 144 partnerships across 42 countries. China was by far the leading market, followed by the USA, Malaysia, France, and Singapore. These are partnerships which offer a unique experience for overseas students and are not those which include exchange programs. When we look at BME education, business and management education specifically, we discover that 24% of those partnerships ranging across 23 countries involve the delivery of BME and related disciplines. Most 1994 Group institutions deliver BME through some form of twinning arrangement, programs that are delivered in partnership with an overseas institution. BME distance learning or virtual university programs have seen expansion in recent years. The majority of institutions offer students the opportunity to study their courses away from the host HEI, which can then be assessed electronically or via post. This increases the flexibility of study. Students may gain a first-class qualification from an international institution without the restriction of a specific location. A number of institutions also have transnational franchising programs and validated courses in BME, whereby their own courses run elsewhere, or they take the teaching, for a partner HEA's course. China is a particular hotspot for this type of activity. Singapore, Indonesia, Malaysia, and the USA are also popular partnership locations. There is also a growing tide of institutions across the sector investing and concentrating their international resources in an overseas campus, an international branch of their institution located in a partner country and offering its degrees to students home and abroad. The delivery of BME programs is a large part of these operations. Within the 1994 group alone, the Lancaster University Management School has bases in India, Malaysia, Pakistan, and Jordan, and the Henley Management College in Malaysia. Outside of the group, there are significant management schools as part of both the University of Nottingham campuses in Malaysia and in China. The University of Liverpool has an established joint business school in China, and London Metropolitan University has recently announced plans to establish a business school in India. These developments bring the possibility of student and staff exchange, and it's highly likely this model of international working will become more widespread if we are backed to do so. The common benefit felt through all types of international partnership is that students are enjoying a truly global education. So there are a clear set of drivers motivating the internationalisation of UKHE and a multitude of paths down which international partnerships can progress. But although the number of partnerships occurring is already impressive, we must go further. Competition, we know, is growing. China more than doubled its international research partnerships from 98 to 2008. More and more UK institutions and departments within these institutions need to form ever more ambitious partnerships if we are to keep pace with the likes of China. For this to happen, I believe three steps must be taken. First, the benefits of that internationalisation brings must be strongly promoted to university leaders and staff. There still exists a worrying degree of uncertainty as to why universities should enter into such a strategy. This understandably is a major deterrent. International partnership in particular brings with it time and resource demands as well as a high element of risk. Without clearly identified benefits and a sense at the outset of what the long-term goals are, many will be reluctant to make the necessary commitment. It is up to all of us to champion internationalisation by promoting the broader benefits that it brings. This is at the heart of the international strategic and capacity building work that the ABS has established at the heart of its new strategic plan. Second, we have to ensure that overseas students continue to have the freedom and incentive to take up places at UK universities. The reciprocal relationships which allow UK students to benefit from overseas study will break down if the doors to British universities are closed to international students. We need to keep open the post-study work route and avoid encouraging genuine international students to look elsewhere. We must not give the impression that UK higher education is isolating itself from the world. Finally, governments around the world must encourage major partnerships. Part of this must be through governments working with major foundations and business donors to identify areas of primary international importance that require global solutions. This may be challenging given existing procedures and national hierarchies, but it would significantly increase the volume, range, and durability of substantive partnerships in both teaching and research. Universities are at their best when they fully embrace their global role. By working collaboratively with others from around the world, they can achieve far more than they ever would alone. This impacts on students who are able to develop into true global citizens thanks to the opportunities overseas study offers. It works for researchers whose work can only stand to gain from the shared knowledge and resource international partnership brings. And ultimately, it means that global issues can be more readily addressed as cultural understanding is broadened and the innovations needed to progress past difficult circumstances emerges. Malaysia aspires to become a regional leader in providing higher education in Southeast Asia. At the moment, the great reputation that British education enjoys means that they are eager to include us in this project. This is a great opportunity to establish broader connections within the region, help Malaysia grow economically and socially, form future business relationships, create goodwill, and promote Britain. Britain must not be seen as shutting itself off towards the rest of the world, adopting a hostile attitude towards foreign students. A positive story must be continually repeated about the quality, strength, and diversity of the higher education system. This must be a story shared equally without a sliver of daylight in between by individual HE institutions and the government and its representatives overseas. The QAA concludes that there are no signs that demand from Malaysia for UK higher education is likely to decline. In fact, they see strong possibilities for it to continue increasing. If we want to continue eating a disproportionately large slice of the cake, we need to carefully consider existing practice and any future policies we make. We need to ensure that the UK stays an attractive alternative in this increasingly global market of higher education. We need to invest in our universities, and we need to communicate to our international partners that we welcome international students and that they shape an important part of the future of Britain. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.